Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
This podcast is filled with football nostalgia because in this episode, we discuss the NFL's first helmet logo, the career of Bruce Smith, Heisman winner Angelo Bertelli, and so much more, and it's all coming up in just one moment. This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we are podcasting from America's North Shore, bringing you the memories of the gridiron, one day at a time. So in taking the snap from the sportshistorynetwork.com and handing off to pigskindispatch.com, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of pigskindispatch.com, and welcome once again to the Pigpen for your daily football history. Taken in small doses, one day at a time, we're going to fill your football brain with a lot of knowledge of football history. And like I said, it pertains to this date. And today's date we're talking about is June 18th. So if you're listening on June 18th, it's very relevant. If you're not, hey, it's evergreen. It's history. You're always going to be enjoying it. So we're going to get to our football history headline first. In 1921, the Detroit Tigers football franchise forms. After being known as the Detroit Heralds the year prior, it only survived part of the 1921 season. In the middle of the season, the franchise folded and sent their entire roster to the Buffalo All-Americans. June 18, 1948, the use of a logo on an NFL helmet is credited to Fred Gehrke, a running back for the Los Angeles Rams. Now, before that, they were just, you know, leather football helmets, if anybody wore helmets at all. But in, you know, 48, I think the plastic helmets were starting to come along then, too. They were just plain colors, solid colors. And according to a PFRA article written by Peter Vishnowski for the organization's Coffin Corner publication in one of the episodes in year 2000, Gehrke sat down in his garage the summer of 1948 to paint a yellow lacquer on his team's leather helmets. He didn't realize at the time that he was creating a multi-million dollar business and placing his name in football immortality as well. Vishnowski goes on to write that it was the blandness of the helmets and the uniforms that just didn't sit well with the art major in Gehrke. He toyed with the idea of painting a helmet, and later, after expressing this and at the urging of his coach, Bob Snyder, Fred made a pen and ink drawing to illustrate what the design would look like, a concept drawing, as you will. Coach Snyder suggested the halfback paint a helmet with the ram horns on it that would he would then present it to owner Dan Reeves of the Cleveland Rams. Using his skills as a technical illustrator, Fred painted two Rams horns on an old college helmet. An intrigued Reeves had reservations, but the legality of having an adornment on the helmet, he said, would have to check with the NFL. And according to Gehrke, the answer Reeves got back from the NFL offices is that you're the owner, you can do whatever you want. And that did it. Dan Reeves commissioned Fred Gehrke to paint 75 helmets at a dollar each per helmet. The project took Gehrke all summer in 1948, and the history that stuck was made. You know, that's just a great story. Think about, there's only, maybe just the Cleveland Browns are the only helmet that doesn't have an adornment on it, but they do have that big stripe. That might not have been legal either. So maybe technically all of the helmets have adornments on them now with the, you know, the big wide and black, white and black stripes of the Cleveland Browns. And, you know, not too many football helmets in the college game don't. You can, I can think of, you know, Notre Dame doesn't, Penn State sort of bland, and there are a few others. But most, everyone has an adornment and an icon on their football helmet. You can thank that to Fred Gehrke on June 18th, 1948 for that contribution. Now let's go to our newspapers.com football history headline of the day, and it comes from the June 19th, 1973 Santa Cruz Sentinel in Santa Cruz, California, when the readers spotted the headline that day of NCAA proposes random drug testing for athletes. Yeah, this was in reference to a June 18th, 1973 policy established where the NCAA set up mandatory random urine tests for all participants to test for illegal forms of drugs and narcotics. NCAA spokesman Robert W. Pritchard stated, "The situation is critical and that the test would not lead to punishment, but were for to gather facts that we hope will provide us for future direction in fighting drug abuse." According to the NCAA.com, the organization still tests for steroids, peptide hormones, and masking agents year-round, and also tests for stimulants and recreational drugs during championship periods. And if you want to be able to read through some old articles like we just did from the Santa Cruz Sentinel, you need to check out newspapers.com. At newspapers.com, you can get access to over 640 million pages worth of the news from the U.S., Canada, England, Scotland, Ireland, and more, dating all the way back to 1798. Get a free one-week subscription to newspapers.com by visiting sportshistorynetwork.com/newspapers, and with a paid subscription, you'll also be helping to support the production of this and other great Sports History Network shows. Once again, to get your free 1 week, you have to go to sportshistorynetwork.com/newspapers, and you will have that first 7 days on us, and I think you're going to enjoy it so much, you're going to pay for that subscription, and you're going to help promote these podcasts so you can have that great sports of yesteryear coming into your ear each and every day of the year. So make sure you do that as soon as you can. Now let's go to our June 18th birthdays of Hall of Famers. We're going to start off in the year 1912 in Wharton, Texas. University of Texas halfback from 1930 to 1932, Harrison Stafford claimed his date of birth. The NFF's bio of Harrison says that he and another back named Ernie Coy provided Texas football with one of the nation's best backfield punches during the 1930s. Stafford laid enemy defenders low with blocks and blew holes in the line wide open for Coy to dash through and gain yardage to score points. The two became the most feared tandem in the Southwest, and during the sophomore season of 1930, a year when Texas finished with a record of 8-1-1 to claim the Southwest Conference Championship, the tandem made their debut and dropped jaws in every stadium that they and the Horns played in. Stafford's played an important role in clinching of the title. In the next-to-last game of the season, Texas and Texas Christian were locked in a defensive battle until Harrison slammed home for the only touchdown of the day and provided the Longhorns with a 7-0 victory. In 1969, he was named to the Southwest Conference's 50-year team, covering the years of 1919 all the way to 1968. The National Football Foundation selected Harrison Stafford for entrance into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1975. Our next birthday took place on June 18th, 1921. West Springfield, Massachusetts, the starting quarterback of the Notre Dame Fighting Irish from 1941 to 1943, Angelo Bertelli was born. Bertelli, who was called the Springfield Rifle, played in only 6 games during the 1943 season, yet won the Heisman Trophy per the National Football Foundation. Just prior to the 7th game of the season, Bertelli was called into service with the Marine Corps as he served as an officer at Iwo Jima and Guam. They were calling him the greatest passer in Notre Dame history as Bertelli completed 69% of his passes for 10 touchdowns. And during that 1943 campaign, the Irish averaged 43 points a game in the season's first 6 contests. Notre Dame finished with a 9-1 record, losing only to the Great Lakes Naval Station 19-14 in the final 30 seconds of the play. Yet, they retained their number one ranking in a national championship. Angelo was an instant sensation at Notre Dame, as he was a second in Heisman voting as a sophomore tailback. When the Irish switched to the T formation in his junior season, Bertelli became the team's quarterback and won the first of his 2 All-American awards. In a game against Stanford, he completed 10 consecutive passes and threw for 4 touchdowns. Angelo Bertelli was honored with induction into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1972 after the National Football Foundation tabulated up their votes. And following his military service, he played for the Los Angeles Dons and the Chicago Rockets in the All-American Football Conference in 1946 through 1948. June 18, 1937, Brooklyn, New York. Bob Riefsnyder, the Navy's tackle from 1956 to 1958, arrived in this world. The footballfoundation.org website informs the reader that in 1957, Riefsnyder was named the All-American and won the Maxwell Trophy, given to the nation's best player. This was the first time the Maxwell Award was given to a guard or a tackle. Bob Riefsnyder received the great honor of being selected for inclusion in the College Football Hall of Fame in 1997. June 18, 1963, Norfolk, Virginia. Virginia Tech's defensive end from 1981 to 1984, Bruce B. Smith was born. When Smith came to Virginia Tech, the Hokies were simply a mediocre program. His play helped boost the program's profile into decades of subsequent success per the National Football Foundation. Smith had a rare combination of strength, quickness, and raw talent that played very nicely into success on the defensive line. Injury forced Bruce to miss most of his freshman season, but as a sophomore, Smith had 8 sacks, and in his junior year, he became a first-team All-American selection by adding 22 sacks to his resume. He capped off his senior year with 16 more quarterback takedowns behind the line, and Bruce was honored as a consensus All-American selection and won the Outland Trophy. Over his career, he had 46 sacks, 71 tackles for loss, and resulted in an incredible total of 504 yards lost in college. The College Football Hall of Fame proudly placed a display in honor of Bruce Smith in their legendary museum in the year 2006. And in 1985, the NFL draft, he was taken as the first player overall by the Buffalo Bills. He was named the Defensive Rookie of the Year, and when his 19-year pro career ended, he sat on top of the game's all-time sack list with 200 sacks. He was selected to 11 Pro Bowls, and the Pro Football Hall of Fame shares how the Bills teams that won 6 AFC Eastern Division championships and 4 AFC titles, many observers feel that 1990 was Smith's finest season. That year, he recorded 19 quarterback sacks, and his dominant play frequently changed the complexion of the game. Smith's 13 seasons and 10 more or sacks was an NFL record, and Bruce Smith was enshrined in the Pro Football Hall of Fame in the year 2009. We're sure glad that you could join us today for this great football history, because we do it on a day-to-day basis, and we hope you'll join us back tomorrow for our June 19th edition. And each and every day we do this, bringing you football history one day at a time. You can find us at pigskindispatch@gmail.com. You can email us at. You can also look at pigskindispatch.com for more blog posts, and all of our podcasts are there. Also, your favorite podcast provider, and we also are on Twitter as @pigskindispatch, Facebook, we're on as Pigskin Dispatch, and you can find us at thesportshistorynetwork.com, where we and other podcasters collect our samples of podcasts and put them in there to become the headquarters of sports yesteryear. I think you'll want to check that out, sportshistorynetwork.com. And until tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day. That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck, because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.